Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. It's me, Dov. I am hosting the Forza Time Football podcast this midweek in the absence of Connor Clancy, because he'll be back at the weekend. And we're going to talk about some Champions League and Europa League and the Italian teams in the competition. And to help me do that, I've got two fantastic, lovely gentlemen and Serie A journalists. First up, we've got Vieri Capretta with us. Vieri, how are you doing?
Hello, I just got back from Napoli, what was a fantastic night at the San Paolo. And yeah, well, I'm doing absolutely fine. Better than Lazio, for sure.
There we go. We're going to get on to Lazio, because they spoiled everything. And joining me and Vieri, we've got Padraig Whelan. Padraig, how are you?
I'm good, Dov. Unfortunately, I was not in Napoli and had the pleasure of just watching the Lazio game from start to finish. So maybe not doing as well as Vieri.
There we go. Right, so Vieri, as you mentioned there, he was in Napoli, I was in Turin, and I've just got back from the San Siro, from Milan in the Europa League. Forza Time Football are at the games, hashtag. There you go, everybody. But Connor annoys you about that every week. So let's get into the stuff that we watched. We'll start off with Tuesday's games. We'll do it chronologically, because it's easier for me. Juve beat Young Boys 3-0. Mohamed Camara was sent off for 12 minutes to go. Paulo Dybala got a hat-trick. This was a training game for Juve, and that's really all that needs to be said. Young Boys have no chance against Juve at the Allianz Stadium. And then in Rome, on the same evening, Roma beat Victoria Pilsen 5-0. Eden Dzeko got a hat-trick in that one, with Under and Justin Kluivert scoring as well. Padraig, obviously these two games, there's not really too much you can say about them. They were expected to be quite easy for the two teams, and it turned out to be exactly that.
Yeah, I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head there, Dov. That's exactly what the likes of Juve and Roma, like the champions of Italy and a team that got to the semi-finals last season, that's what you should be doing to the fourth seeds and the weaker teams in the group. You should be beating them pretty convincingly, and both teams did that. I mean, that's what we were frustrated with Napoli in the week one, that, you know, that could be a big point drop for them. The fact that they didn't manage to, or 2 points drop, they got the point obviously in Serbia, but they didn't manage to beat the bottom team convincingly, and that could come back to haunt them. Whereas Roma and Juve, like you said, they just took both teams, Young Boys and Victoria Pilsen, to task pretty much. Convincing winners, impressive winners, but that is essentially what we expect them to do, and thankfully they both did it.
And Vieri, just a quick word on Paulo Dybala, because he played not too badly.
Well, no, absolutely not. His first goal was fantastic. He probably could have scored another 3 goals. Mm. And I think what's the interesting talking point is how he almost perhaps felt liberated by the absence of Cristiano Ronaldo, and felt he was the prima donna again. the diva running the show, and he did so. And I think it's very important for Juve to have the best Dybala, because now at the start of the season, it doesn't matter if players aren't in their best form, but come March, April, May, everyone will be needed for that final run. And Dybala is obviously a superstar for Juve, and he showed it last night.
Yeah, well, and yeah, exactly. And that obviously gives Juve, I think, their 9th win in succession this season, which is kind of their best ever start since 1929-30 when Serie A started. So this team is kind of well on the road to be one, being one of the best Juventus sides in history. So there we go. Looking at kind of how that leaves the group for Juve, obviously with United and Valencia drawing, that means Juventus are 2 points clear of Group H, and one good result, I think, against the two games against Man United and Juve will pretty much have won the group. I think they've more or less done that already. Whereas in Roma's group, things are quite tight. CSKA Moscow are top of the group on 4 points, and then Roma and Real Madrid are kind of level in second on 3 points each. So the important games there, Paddy, are the two ones against CSKA Moscow, because if they win one of them, then it looks like they'll probably get second place.
Yeah, the fact that CSKA Moscow have went to Real Madrid during the week and won shows you that, you know, that's maybe a tougher task than it would have first seemed. I know Real Madrid are maybe having their problems at the minute, but that just shows you the difficulty of that game will pose. But I think you're right, the fact that they've went and kind of got that result under their belt, they should probably win the return leg as well. That's 6 points there, and you're looking at the Moscow games as being decisive for both. How Roma fare maybe against Real Madrid at home could also be decisive if they can manage to get a point from that, and that maybe they are kind of chasing it a bit now, that the fact that CSKA have picked something up against them, that's kind of bonus points that they probably weren't banking on themselves. But it does leave it quite open, but I'm still fairly confident that Roma are going to get out of that group reasonably comfortably, because I think they'll do the business against CSKA twice.
The paradox is, actually, let me just jump in, that this makes it a lot harder for Roma, because now there's another player in the game, whereas at the start we just thought it was going to be Real Madrid first, Roma second, and then two just left there to fight out for the third spot. This time with CSKA, after that victory, back in it. Well, actually, they're the top of the group right now. It could be slightly more complicated for Roma. But I agree with Paddy. I think they'll do the job.
But Vieri, I think what you're missing is they've got Luca Pellegrini, who takes amazing touches, especially in the Champions League. That's what you're missing.
Well, I mean, aesthetically speaking, Pellegrini did have a great start to his Champions League career, and undoubtedly his touch is amazing, which is what you expect from football at that level. Well, I'm going to say.
Here you go on Vieri's Twitter and you'll get the context to that. Right now, let's go down south, because the big game of this week in the Champions League was, of course, Napoli against last season's losing finalists Liverpool, and Napoli won. Lorenzo Insigne scored in the 90th minute to give, I think, what was a deserved win for Napoli. Liverpool, for me, offered very, very little in an attacking sense. Podrick, before I go to Vieri, I'm going to come to you. How amazing is Alan? He was brilliant again.
Yeah, and I think this is, I know that you were even kind of barking or hitting the drum for him even in his Udinese days, and kind of shown that even back then that he kind of had this ability to go on and become one of the leading Serie A midfielders, and he is that now. I thought even in the game against Juve the Saturday night before, and I know Napoli lost, but he was one of the few Napoli players that I thought he never gave up. He was still at his best even in the second half when things kind of were going against him, and then he just carried that on into the game against Liverpool. And I think it's quite interesting as well, it's really coming at a time when, for me, Marek Hamsik is really starting to, he just doesn't look, I don't know if it's a position issue under Ancelotti now, but he's really not impressed me at all this season, and there's kind of flashes last season that he was maybe on the downward spiral as well, and he seems to be one of the first to be substituted in games, and he's always the first to go to shake things up, and then you've got Alan beside him who's just completely making up for that. He's just been monstrous in some of the games. He really can do it all, I think, and he showed that again the other night and against Liverpool as well, a team that, you know, they're obviously really strong in midfield and got to the Champions League final last season. To put in a performance like that, he's really stepped up as well in Jorginho's absence, and like I said, I think he kind of does it all now. He's got the pass inside to his game, he's got that tenacious win the ball back for you, he gets forward really well, you know, he supplied the goal and Chiren and stuff like that. So he pretty much, for me, like you kind of suggested there, he's got it all in his locker. And maybe, I don't know, you guys, that maybe doesn't get the credit he deserves as a whole when you're talking about the league, but definitely one of the best centre midfielders that Serie A has got.
Now, Vieri, you said, because you were there, and then you tweeted today that the champions, when Napoli fans do their wee championship, was amazing. But you said the most amazing thing was Napoli's defensive performance.
Well, absolutely. They conceded no shots on target to Liverpool. And if you look at Firmino, Mane, Salah, just saying these three names means you're going to have to give them some space at the back at some point. And Napoli just had the perfect game, not just defensively, but overall, because they kind of had a very balanced first half and then increasingly attacked until they hit the bar and then eventually scored in the perfect moment because Liverpool had no time to react to that. So it was literally the ideal perfect game, both in the way it was played by Napoli and also in the way it panned out. So I think I was impressed. We were talking about who was going to be a man of the match for UEFA, and it was going to be, I'm going to give this gossip to you, it was going to be Koulibaly until the 91st minute. and then obviously the prize went to Insigne.
Well, I know how you like players to be decisive when you do the team of the week on FIF. You can that's one of almost your criteria. It's like, well, a player can have a good game, but football is about decisive moments. So scoring a goal or a game saving tackle can be the things that get you in your team, which some people don't particularly like.
I know. I have to give credit to Koulibaly and Albiol last night, and even to Carlo Ancelotti, because the formation he lined up and deployed on the pitch looked something in between a 4-4-2 and a 3-5-2, and it was slightly different to what he had in recent games, and obviously very different to Sarri's main 4-3-3 system. And it worked perfectly because having Maximovic, so another centre-back, working in between his usual centre-back position and more of a right-back position was key in having essentially three men always blocked at the back, stopping the three attacking players from Liverpool. And I thought, of course, Fabian Ruiz had a very good performance. And even Hamsik, even though Paddy didn't particularly like his start to the season, he was great as well. Obviously, Alan, the main performer. And it just worked out. And even Ancelotti bringing in Mertens at the perfect moment when his pace and his...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
His technique made a difference in the end. So I think there's very little you can criticize to Napoli's game. It's a matter of seeing how many faults there are by Liverpool. Obviously, it's impossible to tell in football the merit of a team and how the other underperformed.
Well, that was the thing. Like, you kind of mentioned pretty much the whole team there, Vieira, so they did all play well. The player you forgot to mention, who I thought played really well, was Callejon, because he, like, I agree with you in terms of the formation. It looked like it was going to be a back four, but it quickly moved into a back three when needed. And Callejon ended up playing as a wing back for a lot of the time as well, and did it without complaining, and worked his backside off, helping out Maksimović when he needed to. And obviously he ended up getting the assist for Insigne's goal. So it was something of a new role for him, and I thought he did brilliantly.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there must be a reason why three coaches in Benitez, Sarri and Ancelotti, the one player who's always played every single game pretty much and has never been under any criticism or discussion, I think the only single one is Callejon. And he showed it again last night. He sometimes isn't very flashy. He's not one for the social media that way. But he is one for football games. And he's got such a tactical intelligence that made him perform fantastically well last night. So I only forgot him because I don't have time to mention.
You can't mention them all, Vieri. In terms of the atmosphere then, because obviously you were there, and this is why people listen to this, because we are at the games and we see what's going on. Obviously, the famous Napoli champions chant was there. Juventus tried to do it on Tuesday, but it didn't quite have the same vivaciousness to it, I don't think.
No, I think that was impressive. I was told it was going to be quite impressive. The atmosphere overall, obviously, is what you expect from the San Paolo, which isn't always full. It's a very old stadium, and I'd say not great at all. One of the worst I've been in my life. But obviously, this isn't down to the fans. This is just down to maintenance. But the fans do lift up the whole level of the whole thing, and the atmosphere is amazing. I think it still comes behind what you get at a full house San Siro, but obviously it is a different type of stadium, and Napoli fans have shown that when they want to, they can give the team an extra support. And Insigne told UEFA.com, my microphone last night, literally that, he was like, we haven't had them in a lot of games this season, the fans, but obviously this is also a message to them. This is what you can do to the fans if you turn up. Napoli able to completely annihilate the last year's finalists. So yeah, the atmosphere is one to give enough a good enough reason to actually travel all the way to Naples.
There you go, Paddy. You having that? The San Paolo is the worst stadium Vieri's ever been to.
Oh, maybe for Vieri, but you know me, Dov, I'll defend Napoli and the good people of Naples until the end.
Wasn't talking about the people, I was.
Oh, well, that's true, Vieri. I didn't mean to put words in your mouth. But it's got a charm to it, you might say, the San Paolo.
It's funny because I was on some of the smaller Italian football sites. They picked up on a quote by a journalist by the name of Melissa Reddy, who I think works for joe.co.uk, and she said that the San Paolo is the worst stadium she's ever been to, and said that she'd been to South America and Africa, and none of them compared to how bad the San Paolo is, maintenance-wise, like you say, Vieri. So De Laurentiis needs to get his hands out of his pockets and work with the council and get a new stadium, but because the people of Napoli deserve it. And just one thing on that, Paddy, you'll know, after the game, Arkadiusz Milik, your favourite Polish striker, he had a bit of a run-in with
some
Neapolitan people after the game.
Yeah, that's the only quite disappointing that it's...
Well, tell everybody what happened first.
It's pretty much he was on his way back home after the game, and his car was stopped in traffic. It was quite near the Napoli training ground, and a group of men on motorcycles with helmets and guns pretty much approached his car and held him up at gunpoint to hand over his watch, which he did, obviously, and quite a traumatic experience for him. But the sad thing is for Napoli players that it's kind of a semi-regular occurrence.
Maybe it's like a Neapolitan welcome. It's like, you've not made it in Napoli, you've stolen your watch.
Stolen your watch. I think even players' wives have been targeted. And the worst thing is, Hamsik has lost three different watches in three different incidents to Muggen, which, you know, it's kind of what it sounds funny, but quite quite worrying. Maybe he, maybe Marek needs some extra security. He should bring Alan around, as hire Alan as personal security. Bring him around Naples. But yeah, so obviously that was quite a disappointing to read after the game. And otherwise, what was a really good night for them.
Yeah, indeed. And obviously that, that puts them at the top of Group C above Liverpool and PSG, who are both on 3 points, Napoli on four.
You wouldn't have thought that, would you, though?
No, you wouldn't have. But this is the last question I kind of want before we go on to Inter. Do you think that draw against Red Star could come back and bite Napoli? Because obviously they've got the win against Liverpool, which kind of puts them a bit in the driving seat. But if Liverpool win Anfield and you'd expect Liverpool to beat Red Star twice, then Napoli could still be struggling a little bit. Whereas if they beat Red Star, it'd have been a whole different story.
Yeah, I don't see either Liverpool or PSG dropping points at all to them. I think that the both of them are going to pick up 6 points. So then you're kind of looking at what Napoli can do at Anfield and in Paris, and especially at home to PSG. But pressure's kind of on you then. You know that you're kind of having to pick up results from those games, because you really should not be banking on Red Star doing you any favours, as we saw what PSG did to them. You know, they're probably going to do that again, and that Liverpool attack will likely fancy their chances. So I'm inclined to agree with you, unfortunately. I think as good a result as last night was, and it kind of keeps them very much in the melting pot, it could prove costly, the 2 points that they let slip on match day one.
Right. But let me just quickly ask you a question. Do you think they would have gotten that result against Liverpool had they not failed to win against Red Star? I think it almost gave them an extra boost.
It's possible. I mean, hindsight is, of course, a wonderful thing. Honestly, I think that they would have got the result anyway, just given the performance and the way that they kind of stifled Liverpool completely. I think they kind of, obviously they knew they needed to win, and it looked like they weren't going it for as much as the kind of game that they did have, but they got it and they're right back in the mix again. Right, quickly on Inter, they went to Eindhoven to play PSV. They went behind, but they got it back again. They went behind just like they did against Spurs, and Raja Nainggolan and Mauro Icardi got the goals. They gave Inter a 2-1 win, which puts them joint top of their group with Barcelona. Vieri, is this Inter's new thing? To concede a goal, wake up a little bit, and then make a comeback?
This time around, Inter seemed in control throughout the game. Obviously, you know, it doesn't always mean that if you're in control, you then eventually win. But this time, it wasn't just a miracle like against Tottenham. This time, they did deserve the victory. And it's Inter, isn't it? You know, they are able to do everything at any given point. But I think, aside from the fact they're a crazy team, if someone like Nainggolan starts playing at his level, you know, they've made some big investments in the summer, and I think it's paying off. You know, Mario Icardi, we know he's a great striker in Serie A. He's now proving it in the Champions League. Nainggolan, for me, is one of the best midfielders in the world. And he showed it last year with Roma. He got to the semifinals of the Champions League himself. So I think Inter have a good squad. I'm not surprised they can be.
And they rotated as well at the weekend. So they managed to rotate, get the win at the weekend, got the guys back, and then got another win against PSV. So you're right. They've got the squad that they can now play two games a week and get 3 points in each of them.
No, absolutely. And I did think after they beat Tottenham that same Inter that played against Tottenham with, you know, in that way, obviously leaving the last 10 minutes aside, would have had a difficult time at Eindhoven. But they've grown since that game. They got victories in Serie A, one after the other. And now it seems like Spalletti has found his preferred team, his preferred starting 11. He's able to rotate. And, you know, you go away to PSV, you control the game, and you get 3 points. So Inter won't be an easy opponent for anyone this season.
Right, so there we go. That is the Champions League done. Four Italian teams played in it, four Italian teams won in it. And now we move on to the Europa League, because it was a bit more contrasting. Milan beat Olympiacos 3-1 after going a goal down, but then Patrick Cutrone scored two, and Higuain got the other one after Gattuso made some second-half substitutions and changed from his 4-3-3 to a 4-4-2, which made all the difference. Paddy, Patrick Cutrone is... He's a good wee player, isn't he?
He is. And he's the kind of player I like. You know, a young guy, just no fear about him. He just seems to be loving every minute of his time since he pretty much broke into the first team. And, you know, I like to see that like young players, especially at a big club, breaking in, getting their chance. Because, you know, it is difficult for... You don't often kind of get a chance, especially last summer. They spent so much money. They brought in, you know, like Andre Silva, who's now Spain doing really well, but they strengthened in his area of the field, and he probably was looking at that thinking, you know, he maybe have to go elsewhere to get a chance. And now fast forward just over a year later, and he's one of the mainstays in the team. And it's, you know, it might not be a coincidence that over the last few weeks Milan kind of struggled. And I know maybe it wasn't so much attacking problems that they had the last few weeks, maybe more at the other end of the park, but it did coincide with Cutrone being out injured. And now that he's back, it was a pretty impressive performance. Took both his goals well. He's really good header of the ball as well. That's one thing I really like. But
yeah, I mean, like the thing is, obviously saying that, like I think the result flatters Milan, if I'm being perfectly honest, because they were rubbish. Vieri, like, they barely created anything in the first half. I think maybe one, two chances. Obviously, they had, like, Bonaventura had a goal that was going to go in, but then offside Castillejo decided to tap it in, and Bonaventura was annoyed. And Gattuso, even after a game, still mourning about kind of defensively. They're just not concentrating. They're not compact enough. There's still problems there. And I think kind of when they're getting results like this, that I maybe paper over the cracks a little bit. I think that's maybe an issue that they need to sort out.
Well, I think it's important to win these kind of games regardless, because obviously the Europa League is a very long competition. So if you can get it out of the way, especially the first games with the 3 points, it doesn't really matter how you do it. So I think part of the reason they weren't great is that, because you need to get the job done and that's it. But I do agree. I watched the game, and I think as the first half, you know, Milan were slightly better than Olympiacos, and then, but they were unable to score and they were losing. And then Olympiacos started controlling the game early in the second half. Then Cutrone came on, gave that kind of electric shock to the whole team, and they managed to turn things around. So it doesn't take much to beat certain teams in the Europa League in the early stages. And I think that was probably Milan's aim, you know, not waste too many energies tonight, get the job done, and then go on to the next round. We'll see what they do this weekend in Serie A, obviously, to see if they've actually got that consistency.
Well, it's a big game against Chievo, Vieri, so this is going to be a tough one for them. And then after the break, they've got the derby, so then we'll see where they are after that. It was a bit like, obviously, you had the great atmosphere at the San Paolo on Wednesday. At the San Siro, there was only 22,000 people there, and I think about 4,000.
The away crowd looked quite lively,
Lively, Padraig, very lively. They filled the kind of top tier of the San Siro, pretty much all of it, and were absolutely mental Greek fans. And then after the game, I didn't see it, but I heard it from the media centre. They just started letting off smoke bombs outside after when they were getting like carted off to their buses. I was like, Jesus Christ, these people are crazy. But yeah, they were mad. But only 22,000, so not very many.
Gattuso spoke about it the game, and I think that's the right spirit. He didn't ask the fans to come to the stadium. He was like, you know, it was 7 p.m., so not an ideal time, and we need to make the fans come to the stadium. Yeah. So I think he's sending a message to the players that keep up the good work and you'll have a full house at the San Siro.
Well, that's happened before. I mean, when Milan, I think it was last season or the season before, when they started doing quite well, the fans started turning up to the stadium, and then as soon as they start doing crap again, they don't turn up, apart from obviously the Corva and stuff like that.
So. Look at what happened to Inter in the past two or 3 years. They started making more investments, getting more results on the pitch. And then now
and the people come. Yeah, it's always full pretty much every week. Right, last game in Europe. Eintracht Frankfurt 4, Lazio 1, Dusan Basta and Correa both sent off for Lazio. Paddy, you were on this one. It was They ruined it. All the Italian teams won, and then Lazio went and ruined it in Germany.
Yeah, going for six, an absolute clean sweep across the two competitions, and then, oh man, that was bad. They're defending it pretty much from the start. I think it was 3 minutes when Eintracht scored, and Inzaghi must have been tearing his hair out because they were bad at defending set pieces at the weekend when they lost to Roma in the derby. And then 3 minutes into the game in Europe, they concede a goal, and sure enough, it comes from a set piece, just player completely unmarked in the 6-yard box. And they kind of, Lazio kind of bounced back a bit after that. They were actually decent enough, probably did deserve the equaliser when it came, and then all just kind of fell apart on them. They conceded, I think, 2 minutes after that. As you said, Basta was sent off before half time, then Correa got a straight red card. I think he was just a bit frustrated, and he seemed quite surprised that he got the red card, but he was late tackle and nowhere near the ball. He probably couldn't really complain too much. So just a bad off night for them. But they did, I think the worrying thing is they did look really bad again defensively. And you know, this is a team, they're kind of, you know, not every season it seems to be that Atletico Madrid get tipped as the dark horses for the Champions League, and Lazio are kind of always main in the Europa League. They're always that kind of team that you'd quite fancy if a draw was kind to them, and if it good firepower and stuff and attack, that they could go quite far. And I'm disappointed they didn't go further last season, but if they can't sort out that defence pretty quickly, then they're going to have serious problems, and they won't be going quite deep into the competition this year.
I think, can I just add about atmospheres in stadiums? Now, I've been to the Commerzbank Arena back in the day.
Where, Vieri?
The Commerzbank Arena.
Oh, there you go.
And that is probably the best stadium I've been in terms of actual stadium. And the atmosphere tonight must have been insane there.
Yeah, it was a sellout, and it was pretty loud, yeah, from start to finish already.
It's not easy. If the moment you can see the goal, the moment you go down to 10 men, psychologically it was tremendously hard for Lazio. I think what has to be sorted by Inzaghi is what you were saying about problems at the back, because what they had shown at the start of the season compared to last season is where they were conceding less goals. And then all of a sudden in the past two games, they've conceded 7, and you know that needs to change immediately, starting from the game they've got against Fiorentina on Sunday.
Indeed. However, one positive for them is the fact that in the same group, Apollon and Marseille drew 2-2, with Apollon scoring a 90th minute equaliser, which kind of keeps Lazio in second place in the group behind Frankfurt. So they're still very much in this, and they've got it still in their own hands in terms of qualifying. So two very, very big games coming up against Marseille in the competition to see if they can make it deep, like Podrig says. Right, before we finish, obviously the kind of big statistic that came out of this week's European football was, like I mentioned before, Italian teams winning 4 games on the same match day in the Champions League for the first time in 13 years. Hashtag Serie A is back, Podrig. Overtook England in the UEFA coefficients, not that they matter anymore. So Serie A's second best league in Europe then.
Must be the best. The best.
It's not
the
There's
best,
Cristiano though. Ronaldo, what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, this is well, well,
the
well,
best.
So there we go. And you know, nothing to say about that, no? It's like, forget everybody. Everybody should be on about Serie A, because this is where the real football's played.
Well, I was worried when they came that Serie A was gifted the 4 spots instead of maybe earning 4 teams being there on merit. And like, it has been a good start, but until we have 4 Serie A teams in the semi-finals, Dov, then we shan't be pleased. Our work is not yet done.
There we go. Right, that's us going to finish on the European football special Forza Time Football podcast thing that we're going to do. There'll be more throughout the season after European nights, of course. Vieri, Podrig, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. We shall have you back on another European special Forza Time Football podcast in the near future. Remember social media and all that at Serie A FFC. Get on the website because it is fantastic, and watch our videos and stuff like that as well, because FAF is at the games, as we now tell you all the time. So there we go. Until next time, there's nothing left for me to say apart from arrivederci.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.